an inmate is an inmate.
So you kind of put that celebrity aside. He's getting treated just like every other inmate.
We're with Susan McNaughton and Major Gina Clark at State Correctional Institution at Phoenix, about 30 miles northwest of Philadelphia. It's the prison where Bill Cosby, 81 and legally blind, has started serving his 3 to 10 year sentence for sexual assault.
He's Mr. Cosby. He's not Dr. Huxtable. He's not the celebrity that the media swarmed around.
Clark has worked in corrections for 18 years, and McNaughton has handled communications for over 30. They've seen a lot, and not much impresses them.
We've had legislators. We've had high-profile killers. Ira Einhorn has been in our system. Mumia Abu-Jamal is in our system. John DuPont, Jerry Sandusky. You name it, you know, we've pretty much had it.
Cosby is the most high-profile prisoner yet. But to them, he's just inmate NN7687.
There's no walking out the door, getting in your car, and driving anywhere. We're watching you. There's no, like, free roaming around this institution. There's a purpose, and we're watching you. And we're telling you, you have to go back to your cell for a count. Now you have to go to meal. Now you have to go to class. Now you have to go to program. Now's your opportunity to go to yard. When we tell you, you can. That's what prison life is like.
From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Cosby Unraveled. I'm your host, Annette John Hall. Fallen angels suffer most. Those were the words from Judge Stephen O'Neill during the sentencing hearing of Bill Cosby. And indeed, what we witnessed was history, a stunning fall from grace.
There he is. Let's just watch.
The man once beloved as America's dad rolled up the sleeves of his crisp white dress shirt, removed his watch, and was led out of the courtroom in handcuffs. It was a scene that left America speechless.
Wow. What do you say? You know, this is a man, as Yodit was mentioning, Bill Cosby in handcuffs being led away to jail. A scene millions of Americans never, ever, ever would have imagined.
About a mile away at Xavier's Hall, as the rain poured down, some of Cosby's victims gathered to share their truth.
I've waited 32 years for this day, hoping my nightmares will go away. I prayed every day that Mr. Bill Cosby would go to prison, do his time, and finally pay his dues.
Shaylon Lasha testified against Cosby in his second trial.
But he must finally start taking full responsibility for these actions.
In 1986, she was looking to get her foot in the door in the entertainment industry and to expand her budding modeling career. That's when she met Cosby. One afternoon, Cosby invited Lasha to his Las Vegas hotel, the Elvis Presley Suite. She had a cold and remembers Cosby offering her what he said was an antihistamine. That's when he drugged and assaulted her.
He did not care how old I was. I was young and innocent, only 17 years old. Why should he receive mercy just because he is 81?
In the first trial, which ended in a hung jury, only one other accuser was allowed to testify. But then came Me Too. Lasha and 4 other witnesses were allowed to testify in the second trial. Without them, Cosby may have never been convicted. The court's message was loud and clear. Women can come forward years later and be credible.
Justice has been done. Woo!
For many survivors, it seemed like a major victory, a turning point for victims of abuse. But that Me Too moment was short-lived.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified.
I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
Dr. Christine Blasey Ford sat before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, accusing then-Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, asked Ford what was her strongest memory of the incident.
The laughter. The uproarious laughter between the two and their having fun at my expense.
That same suspicion and doubt that had been cast on survivors of sexual abuse, including Cosby's accusers, was used to discredit Ford.
She really doesn't want to testify because right. when she does, she's going to look like the loon that she is. She may very well believe everything she's saying. And that is one of the signs of lunacy, believing something that isn't real.
Why wouldn't it come out earlier?
They want to accuse him of putting his hand over her mouth, of attempted rape, as if they know what that is. We're not even close to that in terms of the facts that are alleged.
The American people aren't falling for it. These allegations, 99% of the time, are just absolutely fabricated.
People on the Republican side say, oh, she deserves to be heard. She deserves to be heard. I don't think she deserves to be heard.
Even President Donald Trump weighed in at a rally in Mississippi.
I had one beer, right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was? Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember.
I do think that with Kavanaugh, you saw a backlash.
Imani Perry is a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University and author of Vexy Thing on Gender and Liberation.
There's a backlash against this movement. And then some of it is just evidence of, I think, of how much we aren't where we say we are culturally. We do tend to sort of make a lot of excuses for abusive male behavior, men and women.
Perry says, like it or not, sexual violence is ingrained in our culture, and it's going to take more than a celebrity trial or a Supreme Court nomination to change it.
This problem of sexual harassment and sexual violence is so broad that we cannot resolve the issue with trials, right? I mean, we have to shift the culture.
The Cosby trial is just one victory for survivors. Perry says what happened at the Kavanaugh hearing is a wake-up call.
The reality is the vast majority of people who harass, who assault, who rape, who abuse, do so with no consequences. And so until we decide that in our day-to-day lives that's going to change, there's no trial in the world that will have the impact of preventing people from doing it.
That is a hard, hard truth. So where do we go from here? To move forward, Perry says we have to figure out a way to deal with abusers and our hurt, disappointment, and sadness connected to them.
How do we deal with the fact that there are so many people in our midst who have done things that are abusive? How do we make space for them to transform? Because the reality is that we are not going to throw away everybody in our families, in our communities, people we love.
If we're going to make space for redemption, we have to take into account Cosby's legacy. He left us with so much. And to some of us, Cosby was a part of our family. And the people we asked, they're struggling to make sense of it all.
Fat Albert, the cartoons.
Oh, and the Cosby Show.
And the Cosby Show. I looked up to that man. I looked up to him just like millions of Americans did. And I was so upset what he had done and what he got caught for.
I actually saw him once in concert. I did see him live once at Radio City way back, and he was brilliant. And that's kind of how I remembered him, so it's disappointing to see what happened now.
You remember when he came down and he was singing, "Oh, Baby"?
Okay, now here we go.
You know the night time.
singing and putting on a show. That was my favorite one. He made you laugh. And he was, he's still a good guy to me. You know, I think he got a raw deal. I mean, but Bill Crosby still was an icon in my sight.
I just thought he was the perfect father and representative for African Americans, and it was very disappointing to see, and sad, just very sad.
I'm 67, and he just inspired me as a whole to become a better professional. Well, it's a Cosby Show. He was into jazz. I'm into jazz. You know, that whole thing I could relate to. And I just thought that it just represented that whole middle-class, educated person of color. And there are many of us out here, you know, but it's not talked about.
How you view Cosby may depend on what generation you're in.
It's complicated, I think, for some folks, especially for folks who maybe have had a parallel path to their coming of age and Bill Cosby's rise. I don't know that I have that same experience.
Maya Francis is a social media strategist and culture writer in her early 30s.
One of the things I think that have been important for me, at least growing up watching the show, is Keisha Knight Pulliam's character and how much when I was a little girl, we kind of favored each other in terms of the way our hair was styled, seeing that she was a brown child on TV.
You know, Maya, you do kind of look like Rudy now that I think about it. For Maya and others in her generation, the connection to Cosby began and ended with the Cosby kids. Sandra, Denise, Theo, Vanessa, and the youngest, Rudy.
It's kind of interesting to come back to what his legacy now means.
While acknowledging the millions of dollars in charitable contributions Cosby has made, in hindsight, Maya sees an ulterior motive.
One of the things that I think enabled his predatory behavior is the fact that he was able to present himself as America's dad. So that the con, so to speak, is enabled by the fact that you don't consider that you're being conned, right? Because you know Cosby is this person who is charitable, who is the Jell-O guy, who has great relationships with kids, that his public persona is soft and wholesome. And so that enables those incidents of predatory behavior, that sets the trap.
And it was a trap that almost everyone fell into. Now, for Maya, the con overshadows the comedy.
In my observation, post-conviction, just seeing folks be okay with saying, you know what, I don't need the Cosby Show at this point, or I don't need that legacy.
The students in David Bianculli's TV history class don't want to have anything to do with Cosby.
They're too uncomfortable with what Cosby is accused of and now in part convicted of doing, and they do not find anything about him remotely funny.
Bianculli is a professor at Rowan University, guest host of WHYY's Fresh Air, and he's also founder of the website TV Worth Watching.
As a TV historian and curator, I would always argue that the work should be able to stand separately.
For Bianculli, Cosby's influence is too important to discard or ignore.
Personally, because I'm so old, I was a little kid when his albums were coming out, and I thought they were some of the funniest albums. And then he had a couple of TV shows in the 60s, including one, I Spy, where he was the first African-American star or co-star of a drama series. And that's hugely significant in TV history. And then 20 years later, with The Cosby Show, he revives the sitcom, and he sort of changed TV twice.
And that's where Bianculli says it gets really, really complicated. For him and for anybody who ever loved Cosby.
Personally, I feel betrayed. Just because as a fan, as a critic, as an interviewer, as an author, I trusted him and responded to him. And I feel like he let me down, too. Like, I'm like way down on the on the list of people that, you know, anybody should be concerned about in terms of Bill Cosby, but there are probably millions who feel the way I do.
Cosby was a master of illusion, but in the end, he created and starred in his own sordid reality show. Special thanks to musicians Tony Trove and Mike Vivas, to engineers Diana Martinez, Al Banks, Charlie Kyer, Adam Stanishevsky, Mike Billers, and Bob Alls. Sandra Clark is WHYY's Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Cosby Unraveled was produced by Jeanette Woods and Lindsay Lazarski. I'm Annette John Hall.